In 1977, I had a play on in the West End called The Old Country, which starred Alec Guinness, who played a Foreign Office defector now living in exile outside Moscow. In the course of the run, various friends and well-wishers came round, often with personal reminiscences of similar spies, figures like Guy Burgess and Kim Philby. The most notable of these was Coral Brown, who at that time I didn't know, but who told me about meeting Guy Burgess in Moscow in 1958 and of the particular incidents that make up An Englishman Abroad. The picture of the elegant actress and the seedy exile sitting in a dingy Moscow flat through a long afternoon listening again and again to Jack Buchanan singing Who Stole My Heart Away seemed to me funny and sad, but it was a few years before I got round to writing it up. It was only when I sent the first draft to Coral Brown that I found that she'd kept not merely Burgess's letters thanking her for running him errands, but also her original notes of his measurements and even his cheque, uncashed and for £6, to treat her and one of her fellow actors to lunch at the Caprice. It's plain in the film that Burgess longed to come back to England. He wasn't allowed to because it was never plain what he could have been charged with, and he might well have compromised too many of his former associates at the Foreign Office. The real solution for Burgess would have been to live until he was 80. Then he would have been welcomed back with open arms. You only have to survive in England for all to be forgiven. This was more or less what happened to Oswald Mosley, and would have happened to Burgess had he lived. He would have gone on chat shows, been a guest on Desert Island Discs, and dined out all over London. In England, you only have to be able to eat a boiled egg at 90, and they think you deserve the Nobel Prize.
An Englishman Abroad by Alan Bennett. A black and white portrait of Joseph Stalin against a red background. A black and white poster of Karl Marx framed between two stone columns on the front of a large theatre. Alan Bates. A black and white poster of Friedrich Engels between another pair of columns. Coral Brown. Further along, a poster of Vladimir Lenin. Charles Grey. Directed by John Schlesinger. Although some incidents are imaginary, this is a true story. It happened to Coral Brown in 1958. Someone carrying a case crosses the frosty square in front of the building. Austere-looking middle-aged gentlemen, some in military uniform, some in suits, are among the audience in a darkened theatre.
Welcome, dear Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Moreover, that we much did long to see you, the need we have to use you did provoke our hasty send. Something have you heard of Hamlet's transformation?
Wearing a dinner suit, Burgess, a man in his late 40s with thick dark hair and eyebrows, begins to nod off in his seat.
Be more than his father's death, that thus hath put him so much from the understanding of himself, I cannot dream of.
Burgess rests his head on the shoulder of a woman to his left.
That being of so young days brought up with him...
She shrugs him off, waking him up. He looks apologetically at a woman to his right, while Coral, the actress playing Gertrude, eyes him coolly.
Known to us afflicts him thus. That opened lies within our remedy.
Good gentlemen, he hath much talked of you.
And sure Burgess gets to his feet, then makes his way across the row.
If it would please you to show us so much gentry and goodwill as to expend your time with us a while, for the supply and profit of our hope, your visitation shall receive such thanks as fits a king's remembrance.
Both your majesty's might by the sovereign power you have of us.
Reaching the back of the auditorium, Burgess sighs thoughtfully. to a man sitting near the exit.
What a pleasure in this day and age to hear the language so beautifully spoken. No, no, I'm not walking out. I have to go for a piss, you see.
He wanders into the corridor.
Wait, right, listen.
Passing a number of staff on a line of chairs next to the wall. With a programme under his arm, Burgess stumps to the top of the lobby stairs while lighting a cigarette perched in his mouth.
Going today, excuse me.
He stumbles past three women attending the cloakroom, then through a door bearing a brass plaque with Russian script on it. Wearing a long, thick coat, a boy with short brown curly hair walks down the ornate marble stairs. A broad, middle-aged woman in utility clothes and a headscarf enters the gents, while Burgess simultaneously sings, smokes, and pees in a urinal. As she mops, he drops his cigarette into it, then gives himself a shake before buttoning up his fly. Eyeing the woman, he crosses to the sink.
No soap. Never any soap. Mila нет, почему?
Не выдали, вот почему.
Do I want to be sick?
Huh?
No, no, not yet. You know, you remind me of a stoker I once knew.
Returning to the high-ceilinged lobby, he climbs the first step, then sees the staff rise from their seats as others open the auditorium doors. He shoves open a large wooden front door, then scans around as he makes his way down several steps to street level. Lighting another cigarette, he plods through some doors, then makes his way up a dimly lit stairwell. To an old woman at a desk.
My dear lady, I do assure you, one is an old friend of the leading actor. We were at Cambridge together. Young men together at university. They've come such a long way, one simply must put one's head around the door.
Ваш пропуск, пожалуйста.
Пропуск.
Потому что не пройдете.
My pass. I'm sure I'm not the first person to remark on your pronounced resemblance to the late Ernest Bevin. It is most striking. You could be sisters. Oh, yes, shocking likeness, I know, but quite amusing. Hmm? One looks such a tremendous villain. Then I suppose one is. Do hurry, woman. One is not feeling at all well. Oh, dear. Thank you. Thank you.
He stumbles through some double doors. Down a corridor, Burgess passes two women in Shakespearean costume. Then hurries past a costumed man looking at a notice board before bounding into a dressing room where Coral is sitting at a table.
The drink, the drink. It is the drink.
Aren't you feeling well?
Oh. Yes, thank you. I'm perfectly all right.
Well, I'll get the woman.
The boy's listening at her door when she opens it.
I'm in a French farce. Oh, now run the tap, for God's sake. I wouldn't care if it's only the interval. If you want to come round and be sick, you might at least save it for the end of the performance.
Oh, yes.
Who are you? Oh. Now, who's that boy outside?
Boy? Outside?
Burgess opens the door.
I don't know. I haven't seen that one before. Could I have one, please?
He picks up a cigarette packet.
I love your frock.
You're very rude. Are you from the embassy?
Not exactly.
Well, there can't be many other Englishmen in Moscow. Who are you?
I was at Cambridge with Hamlet.
Well, why don't we tell him you're here? He's only down the corridor.
All in good time. The question is, you see, are we as welcome as ever?
I know your face.
Crave an A for your throat's sake.
enjoying the play?
I'm adoring it. I like the look of Laertes. He goes rather well into tights.
Yes, that's what he thinks.
Looks as if he's put a couple of King Edwards down there. How do you like Moscow?
Oh, I loathe it, darling. I cannot understand what those three sisters are on about. It gives the play a very sinister slant.
Ah, a drink would help.
Don't you think you have enough? Right. If you're not at the embassy, what do you do?
I liaise.
Are you pressed?
Sort of, yes.
You're not feeling sick again?
I think I am, rather.
Oh, God.
One of the few lessons I've learned in life is that when one is sick, it is always in threes.
Your pardon, please, Miss Brown.
Yes, here it comes.
I'll send somebody in.
Oh,
we must go.
Of course.
Do try to feel better and go home.
Yes.
With her gone, Burgess slowly raises his head from the sink. With a thoughtful look, he takes the amber glycerin soap, wraps it in a handkerchief, then slides it into his jacket pocket. Staring at the settee, he picks up her carton of cigarettes and puts them in the same pocket. He picks up a glass on her dressing table and drinks from it, while sliding a spirit bottle into his other jacket pocket. Staring at himself seriously in a mirror fringed with lights, he straightens his clothes, then sits in her chair. He picks up a cotton pad and starts dabbing his cheeks and nose with makeup. Completing the job, he narrows his eyes. In the corridor, Burgess emerges from the dressing room, then bumps into the man playing Claudius as he leaves his room.
Oh, what a terrible man! Guy!
Ignoring him, Burgess continues on his way, the man playing Rosencrantz in the wings.
When in one line, two crafts directly.
Well, that's just me fine. I'm delighted.
Good. Very pleased.
Shh! This man must set me packing. I'll lug the guts into the neighbour room. Mother, good night indeed.
Coral leaves the stage.
This counsellor is now most still.
To Rosencrantz.
Grave,
where's Charles?
Who was in life a foolish, prating knave. Come, sir, to draw toward an end with you.
You're cutting it fine, darling.
Guess who I've just seen coming down the corridor?
Who?
Guy Burgess. Guy Burgess, dear. The spy. The missing diplomat.
She and Charles, who plays Claudius, enter the stage.
Oh, my good lord. What have I seen tonight?
What, Gertrude? How does Hamlet...
Guy Burgess.
How does Hamlet...
Mad as the sea.
Mad as the seas and wind when both contend which is the mightier. In his lawless fit behind the arras, hearing something stir, whips out his rapier, cries, a rat, a rat. And in this brainish apprehension kills the unseen good old man.
Heavy deed. It had been so with us had we been there. His liberty is full of threats to all.
Two black saloon cars draw up outside the grand front steps of the theatre. A rotund man in a fur hat climbs out of the lead vehicle. Inside, the cast are taking their bows. Hamlet.
I'm broadening. I wouldn't have cabbage for breakfast at home. Why should I eat cabbage for breakfast here?
But it's a good job I like beetroot, otherwise I should be going away to skin and bone.
Don't push, madam.
Mum must be the word, truly.
Why?
Well, we don't want anyone ringing the express.
Gangway! If anyone's going to eat tonight, knock on my door.
He's not fatter.
You knew him?
Oh, I used to run across him years ago, the way one does.
Oh. You're rather left way, aren't you?
What way?
Left.
Oh, I was.
Everyone was in those days.
I liked him.
Despite the fact that he was sick in my basin.
Really? Oh,
bags of charm.
Yeah.
But you're right. I wouldn't set the express on my worst enemy. Drink?
I love one.
It's gone. My drink. My cigarettes. My soap. That stinker.
Bags of charm.
A receptionist issues two room keys.
Thank you.
As Coral and her companion go, the...
Like that?
Please.
Hot, hot, hot. Is your room hot?
Boiling.
I'm sure it's all part of the Cold War.
She runs a tap in her bathroom.
No plug.
Opening a wall cabinet... She hands her friend, who played Rosencrantz, a flask, then heads into the bedroom, carrying two glasses.
Have you found any bugs?
Come again?
Bugs? You found any bugs?
Bugs? No, mine's very clean.
She points to a chandelier and cups her hand to her ear.
Wonderful rooms. Every convenience.
I'll say.
I have one complaint.
Oh, what is that, pray?
Well, in view of the splendid achievements of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, I think at least they might run to a plug for the basin.
They each sit on one of two single beds.
It's like playing Private Lives to a Wednesday matinee in Oldham.
I'll tell you something else. Mm? You can go off caviar.
They drink. Later, she's sitting alone at her hotel dressing table wearing a robe while writing a postcard. Someone slides an envelope under the door, prompting her to look up. Staring at it curiously, she stands and picks it up, then steps into the hallway, seeing no one there but the receptionist at her desk. She waves the letter at her.
Who came?
Я не понимаю. Момент.
The old woman beckons Coral towards her. Coral approaches, then the receptionist opens a drawer and lifts out a plug.
Пожалуйста.
She takes it with an amused nod.
Thank you.
Back in her room, Coral puts the plug in the sink, then runs some water as she places a bouquet of flowers in it. Sitting on the edge of a bath, she opens the envelope and unfolds the letter inside. The next morning, she's sitting on a settee in her robe, drinking tea while holding the letter. She crosses the room to a desk, where she lays the letter down before opening a drawer. Pulling out a white purse, she unzips it and removes a tape measure from inside. Then she folds down the top of the letter and flattens it. In the foyer, Coral's waiting behind a man who's talking to a receptionist.
How do I get there?
The woman takes the letter and shows it to a colleague.
Somebody must be able to tell me how to get there.
The colleague copies the address from the letter as Coral sees Charles descending a stone staircase nearby. They exchange a wave. Returning the letter...
you know.
This is ridiculous. Haven't you got a street directory, an A to Z?
О чем вы говорите? Я ничего не понимаю.
Can I get a taxi?
No taxi.
No trouble.
Oh, no.
No.
Outside.
Taxi!
An old woman is standing in the snowy square outside the theatre, selling flowers. She looks rigid with cold as she offers some blooms to Coral, who shakes her head politely as she passes. Walking in a colonnade, she approaches a man in black military dress and shows him the letter.
Excuse me, do you know where this is?
He shakes his head.
Thank you.
Coral hurries on, oblivious to a black car slowly trundling along the square behind her. The driver and his male passenger are both wearing official-looking hats. Coral arrives outside a building with a union flag flying on the front. She shows her letter to a guard in uniform, then enters an arched walkway, just as the black car pulls up.
Well, I just wanted to know where the place is. How do I get there? I thought that's what embassies were for.
You have to remember the gentleman in question was a spy. In England, he'd be languishing in jail.
He'd rather languishing here, actually.
One man, Toby, reads the letter.
Bring a tape measure.
Mr. Burgess has asked me to lunch.
With a tape measure?
Watching his waistline.
Well, you can't stop me from going to lunch. It's a free country. Or rather, it isn't.
Have lunch here. It's Tuesday.
Skedgeree is delicious.
It's Tuesday, Tessa. Skedgeree!
Tessa doesn't think we take her seriously. What's your chum of yours?
He popped by my dressing room last night and threw up in the basin. It was love at first sight.
First impressions are always best. You've never had any contact with him before?
No.
You didn't meet him when he was at the Foreign Office?
No.
Or the BBC?
No.
What about McLean?
No.
Odd he should come into your dressing room.
Ladies aren't exactly his line.
Are they yours?
Of course, if all he wanted was to be sick, that would figure.
He was coming round to see one of the actors.
Which one? Not being paid by the Daily Express, are you? They're very keen to get hold of him.
I should give up the idea. Have lunch with us. Go on.
I have no intention of having lunch with you. He has asked me to call.
Coral snatches the letter back and takes it to Tessa.
Do you know where this is?
Oh, Tessa doesn't know, do you, Tessa?
Well, Tessa's just a skinny. Tessa's ambition is just marking time. Until she gets her face on the front page of Country Life.
After the advertisements.
For gate-legged tables.
Exasperated, the fur-clad Coral moves over to a table tennis table.
Stalin is dead. Exchanges are taking place. You, the old Vic. Oh, not overtures, I admit. But the tuning up preparatory to the overtures. For the first time in 10 years, we're on speaking terms. Our friends, the foe, are just beginning to play ball. We don't want them to take their bat home, do we?
Burgess and McLean, they're yesterday's breakfast. We want to forget them. The Russians want to forget them.
The thing is, we don't want any fuss at this point. No scenes. This is grown-up stuff.
I am going to lunch. A quiet little meal. I'm an actress. All actresses are fools. It's a well-established fact. Why should there be any fuss?
May I just take the note?
Certainly not the impudence.
Oh, do stay to lunch. There'll be jokes.
Yes, Giles knows lots of jokes. Only we've heard them all. New people make such a change. Well, Tessa wants you to stay. Don't you, Tessa?
I think you're both shits.
Oh, what was only teasing? Oh, God, that means we won't be on speakers for a week.
Tessa storms out.
Well, thank you for all your help. Oh, don't bother to show me out. Enjoy your kedgeree.
Giles and Toby share a look. Coral leaves their office and ascends a grand marble staircase to find Tessa consulting a map on a lower level.
Show me that address.
She references the map with it.
Tessa?
Toby's watching.
Naughty.
Sorry.
She hands the letter back and returns upstairs while Coral continues down. As Coral leaves the stately pillared building through the archway, she's watched from an upper floor by Toby, and then followed by the dark-suited figures in the car. The man in the passenger seat pretends to be reading a newspaper and observes her showing a passerby the letter. Coral's about to ask two other men for directions, but they move away, so she shows the letter to another passerby instead. A snow-dusted street alongside a tall grey building with barred windows. Coral looks about with mounting unease. She notices people reading and tearing tags off pieces of paper stuck to a graffiti-strewn wall. Then she approaches another stranger. She shows a mustachioed man the note. He studies it for a moment and then glances around shiftily before nodding to her.
No, it's a mist. No.
She smiles, but he points to the silk scarf around her neck. She removes it and passes it to him. He stuffs it in his coat pocket and leads her away. An aerial view of them crossing a wintry cobbled street that's etched with tram lines. Walking alongside a wide river, the man leads Coral onto a footbridge bustling with pedestrians. A cyclist rides by. Coral's breath is caught on the chilly air, and snow flutters down from the gloom above. A man hobbles by on crutches, missing a leg below one knee. The man brings Coral to a set of weathered apartment blocks. They approach it along a path that threads between bare trees on a grassy slope. Metal drums, sections of heavy piping, and other rubbish litters the area. The man leaves her at the bottom of some steps, and she heads on alone. In the shadow of the towering buildings, the soft grey fur of her coat and hat is disturbed by a stiff wind. Behind her, a figure stokes a fire on a corrugated iron sheet and argues with someone. As she scales more steps towards one of the tower blocks, she passes the boy who was listening at her door at the theatre. Wearing a dark coat and hat, he watches her out of the corner of his eye. The car that was following her parks down below. At the top of a winding stairwell, Coral finds Burgess shaving in his apartment.
He flashed into the crystal mirror. Tira-lira by the river, sang Sir Lancelot. She left the web, she left the loom, she made three paces through the room. She saw the water lilies bloom. She saw the helmet and the plume. She looked down to Camelot. Out flew the web and floated wide. The mirror cracked from side to side. The curse is come upon me, cried the Lady of Shalott.
I've tracked halfway across Russia to get here.
Oh, dear.
I suppose that's my soap.
It is. And very nice, too. Now, do sit down. What a splendid coat. There we are.
He takes it from her.
I've just been tidying up. There. Now, have a drink. You know, quite honestly, I thought you'd chuck.
I nearly did. You steal my soap. You steal my cigarettes. You even stole my face powder.
I know. One should have asked. One is such a coward. Well, hardly luxuries left. Quite a pigsty, in fact. You know, I used to live in Jermyn Street. Tragic, you might think. Well, not really.
That was a pigsty too.
You know, by their standard, it's quite palatial. Even commodious. One is very lucky.
On the cooker.
If that's our lunch, it's burning.
Oh, oh dear.
He checks a smoking saucepan.
Can one salvage some of it, you think? No.
He tips it into a kitchen bin.
Oh, all is not lost. I managed to scrounge 2 tomatoes. And quite a talking point.
A grapefruit.
Treats.
She leaves her bag on an armchair, then joins him at a dining table in the cluttered living room with her vodka shot.
Garlic?
No, thank you.
I love it. Now, tell me all the gossip. Do you see Harold Nicholson?
I've seen him, but I don't know him.
Oh, nice man, nice man. What about Cyril Connolly? He's everywhere.
Well, I haven't run across him either.
Oh. Somehow, one remembers everyone knowing everyone else. Everyone I knew everyone else. Auden, do you know him? Pope Hennessy?
She doesn't share his amusement.
The theatre's in a terrible state. 3 plays closed on Shaftesbury Avenue in 1 week.
Really? Some ballet on ice is coming here. The comrades are all agog about it. I'm rather old-fashioned about ice. I used to direct at Cambridge, you know. One thing's back and wonders. Then one miss one's way. You're not eating your tomato.
Well, I'm not hungry.
Oh, I am. Yum, yum.
He takes her tomato and garlic cloves.
Now.
And leaves her with the grapefruit.
Mm.
Do you see many people here?
Oh, yes. Heaps of chums. I don't know what you're missing with this tomato.
There's your other half, I suppose.
Well, oh, yes. Mm. He's a dab hand at the balalaika. We play duets.
McLean?
McLean? Oh, no. McLean is not my friend. No, Ducky, oh, no. No, no. No, no, he's so unfunny. No jokes, no jokes at all. Positively the last person one would have chosen, had one had the choice. Here we are in this terrible tandem together, you see? Debenham and Freebody. Cross and Blackwell. Auden and Isherwood. Burgess and McLean. Do you know Auden?
You ask me, no.
Don't look. The seeds get inside my plate. You know, people ask me if I have any regrets. The one regret I have is that before I came away, I didn't get myself fitted out with a good pair of National Health Nashers. Admirable, as most things are in the Soviet Socialist Republic. Making of dentures is still in its infancy.
He pops the plate back in.
Mm. You know, there's no one in Moscow at all. It's rather like staying up at Cambridge for the long back. One makes do with whoever's around.
Me?
No, 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 no. Besides, now I asked you here for a reason. Did you bring a tape measure?
She gets up from the table and goes to her bag.
I want you to measure me for some suits from my tailor. I only have one suit, the one I came away in, and I've fallen down a lot since then.
But I shan't know where to start. What measurements will he want?
Oh, measure it all. He'll work it out. He's a nice man.
Won't the people here get you a suit?
What people?
The authorities.
Oh, yes, but have you seen them? Clothes have never been the comrades' strong point. Besides, I don't want to look like everyone else, do I? Now, I seem to remember doing this. Oh.
Your arms can't have changed.
You know, I never cared tuppence about clothes before. I was kitted out in the traditional clothes of my class, you know. Black coat, striped trousers, pinstripe suit, tweeds for weekends. Shit order, of course, always in shit order. But charm, now. I always had charm.
You still have charm, she said through clenched teeth.
Not here. Not for them. For charm, one needs words. I have no words. And short of my clothes, no class. To them, I am the Englishman. Would you like to go to bed with the Englishman, I say? Not really.
Oh, one got so spoiled during the war. The joys of the blackout. London awash with rude soldiery. Skolkozim, skolkolet.
Do you speak Russian?
I manage. I ought to learn simply for the sex. Boys are quite thin on the ground here. They can't speak my language, I can't speak theirs, so when one does get one, it soon palls. Sex needs language.
Well, at least you found a friend.
I don't know whether I've found one or whether I've been allotted one. I know what I've done to deserve him, but what has he done to deserve me? Am I a reward or a punishment? He plays the balalaika, I play the pianola. It's fun. He's an electrician with the ballet. Of course, he might be a policeman. If he is a policeman, he does it jolly well. Forced to live with a policeman, didn't he? Do you know him?
I fear I'm somewhat of a disappointment in the friends department.
Oh, no matter.
You know, no one will believe me when I go home. What did you do in Moscow, darling? Nothing much. I measured Guy Burgess' inside leg.
I shouldn't think one's inside leg alters much, would you? One of the immutables. The knee is such a distance from the main body, whereas the groin, as your honor knows, is upon the very curtain of the place.
Come again?
Tristram Shandy. Of course, you wouldn't do that, would you?
Do what?
Go around telling everybody. My people here wouldn't like that.
No?
No. A hat would be nice. 7 5/8. Now, I'll write down the name of my hat here. Oh, and my bootmaker, too.
Yeah. It's a trousseau.
Yeah. For a shotgun marriage.
Look, how do you know he won't say no? Your tailor.
It would be vulgar to say no. He won't say no.
I'll see what I can do.
Oh, you're not going yet, are you? You don't want to go yet, do you?
Well, couldn't we go somewhere? You could show me the sights.
I can't go out yet. I have to wait for a telephone call. When the telephone call comes, I'm permitted to leave.
Who from?
Oh, you know. My people. It's generally round 4.
That's another 2 hours.
Never mind. I'll play you my Jack Buchanan record.
He lowers the needle onto the record and raises his eyebrows to her as he hums. Stole my heart away. Hands in his pockets, he perches on the arm of the sofa while Coral moves to a chair.
Dreams I know can never be true. Seems as though...
The music seems to grab her in a melancholic way, and as she listens and sits down, tears fill her eyes. He notices her sadness and seems annoyed by it. She looks over to him and forces a smile. He beams back and taps his leg as the music plays on. On the dingy grey stairwell a few stories below, the boy is playing chess on a small board. He glances up in the direction of the music. The record has stopped, and Burgess is winding the record player with a lever.
Good, isn't it? You want to hear it again?
You just have the one.
Just the one.
What's on the other side?
Oh, you don't want to listen to the other side. The other side's rubbish. I never listen to the other side.
What do you miss most?
Well, apart from the Reform Club, streets of London, and occasionally the English countryside, I think the only thing I really miss is gossip. The
Comrades, though splendid in every other respect, don't gossip in quite the way we do, or about quite the same subjects.
Well, pardon me for saying so, dear, but the comrades seem to me to be a sad disappointment in every department. There's no gossip. Their clothes are terrible. They can't make false teeth. What else is there?
The system. Though being English, you wouldn't be interested in that. What do people say about me in England?
They don't say much anymore. I thought of you as a bit like Oscar Wilde.
No, no. Though he was a performer, and I was a performer, both vain. But I never pretended. If I wore a mask, it was to be exactly what I seemed. And as for the other, well, I made no bones about the other. But my analysis of situations, the praises I had to submit to the Foreign Office were always Marxist. Openly so. Impeccably so. Nobody minded. It's only Guy, dear old Guy, quite safe. See, if you don't wish to conform in one thing, you must conform in all the others, and in all important things I did conform. How can he be a spy? Goes to my tailor. The average Englishman, you see, is not interested in ideas. Say what you like about political theory, no one will listen. You could shove a whole slice of the Communist Manifesto into the Queen's speech. Nobody would turn a hair. Least of all, I suspect, HMQ. Am I boring you?
Doesn't matter.
Cole is in the kitchen, scraping burnt food from a small cooker hob, while Burgess is sitting at the pianola. He's working the pedals so the wide ream of music paper trundles through the mechanism depressing the keys.
I'll think of 101 things to ask you when you've gone. How is Cyril Connolly?
You asked me that, I don't know.
So little, England. Little music, little art. Timid, tasteful, nice. Yet one loves it. Loves it. See, I can say I love London. I can say I love England. I can't say I love my country. I don't know what that means. Do you watch cricket?
No. Anyway, it's changed.
Cricket?
London.
Why? I don't want it to change. Why does anybody want to change it? They've no business changing it. The fools. You should stop them changing it. Band together.
Listen, dear. I'm only an actress. Well, not a bright lady by your standards. I've never been much interested in politics, but if this is communism, I don't like it because it's dull. The poor things look so tired. And some people think Australia's dull, and that's not communism. And look at Leeds. Only it occurs to me that we've sat here all afternoon pretending that spying, which is what you did, my darling, was just a minor social misdemeanor. No worse, and I'm sure in some people's minds much better than being caught in a public lavatory the way gentlemen in my profession constantly are. That it's just something we shouldn't mention out of politeness so that we won't be embarrassed. That's very English. We'll pretend it hasn't happened because we're both sensible people. Well, I'm not English. I'm not sensible. I'm an Australian. I can't muster much morality. And outside Shakespeare, the word treason to me means nothing. Only you pissed in our soup, and we drank it. Oh, very well. Doesn't affect me, darling. I will order your suit and your hat, and I'll keep it under mine. Mum, not a word. But for one reason. I'm sorry for you. Now, in your book, in your real book, that probably adds my name to the list of all the other fools you've conned. But you're not conning me, darling. I know. Pipe isn't fooling pussy.
He nods.
Pussy. I was enjoying that.
He gets up and answers the phone.
You spoiled the lady's big speech. Spasiba. Dada.
I just want to be told why.
At the time, I thought it was the right thing to do. And solitude, I suppose.
Oh, solitude.
If you have a secret, you're alone.
But you told people. You told several people.
No point in having a secret if you make a secret of it. Actually, the other thing you might get me is an old Etonian tie. This one's on its last legs. Ah, here's Tolya.
Viviet, guy.
Viviet.
How do you like?
Ah, yes. Now, this is Miss Brown. She's an actress from England.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Very good. If you give him a cigarette, an English cigarette, he'll be your friend for life.
Ah, понимаю сейчас. Чьи адреси? Гамлет. Благодарю вас.
She hands Tolya a cigarette and a lighter, which he covets.
Oh, чудесная штука. Вот какая вещь.
Oh, dear. Sorry.
No.
Нет, я не могу.
No, please.
Правда, не могу. Я не бессовестный.
Please.
Правда?
Carl's let him keep the lighter. Then she hands on the packet of cigarettes.
He's a real queen, Mary. You couldn't order him a suit, could you, too? He'd look so nice.
Anything. Anything.
Hey, Guy, иди сюда. Слушай, я хочу что-нибудь поиграть. Они на балалайке.
Конечно, хорошо. Tolly wants to play you a tune. Do let him, he'd be so pleased.
Tolya's holding a balalaika.
Gilbert and Sullivan.
Take a pair of sparkling eyes, he'd never end the in a bird's
in. Carl looks on with amused shock as Burgess accompanies Tolya on the pianola. Outside, the two suited men are still sitting in the car, and as Carl and Burgess leave the building, the boy follows them.
Where are we going?
Church.
Do you like church?
I adore it. This one, the singing is very good. The opera singers are in the choir, warming up for the evening performance.
That's not another friend.
Oh, good God, no. When I first came here, I was shadowed by a rather grand policeman. That was when I was a celebrity. Nowadays, they just send the trainees. Ironic, that.
Good afternoon. Job ready, Ed.
Not strong on irony, the comrades. Did you know Jack Buchanan?
Yes, I suppose. We nearly got married.
As they walk along, they pass a large stone building where armed guards march up and down.
Strange. Sybil Thorndyke loved it.
They follow the barred fence running around the grounds, and the boy does the same. An iconic image of Mary with the infant Jesus. The picture is surrounded by candles in a large church. An elderly woman lights some candles, while a priest swings an incense burner back and forth. Others are kneeling before a velvet-adorned lectern that is holding another icon. The wall in front of them is decorated with enormous mosaics framed by thick, dark wood panels. The boy is among the congregation. He turns to look up through the smoky haze of the church to Burgess and Coral, who are standing on a balcony, looking down. Tears are rolling down Burgess's cheeks as he smiles to himself, enchanted by the music. He appears unaware that Coral has turned to look at him briefly. Now, they arrive at the plush entrance of her hotel, and they make their way through to the foyer next to the stone staircase. Burgess is holding her arm, then they turn to one another.
I gave you the old mum's number, didn't I?
Yes.
I do like it here. Don't tell anyone I don't. And thanks again, in advance.
He walks away sadly, and she watches him as he turns to wave politely goodbye. She lifts her hand in response, and studies him as he moves through a revolving door. The boy following them goes after him. Another day, and an elderly woman is in her riverside house talking on the phone.
How is he looking?
Oh, he's looking fine.
I do wish I could see him. The old scamp.
Couldn't you go over again? I know he'd love to see you.
Don't think I could now. I've got the stupid hip.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, maybe they'll let him come back sometime.
He shouldn't have to stand in the corner for the rest of his life. It is 7 years. People are silly.
Coral gets out of a chauffeur-driven car.
Yes, well, it is fractionally too short of the battery. Let's have a look and easy alter that. You've really altered very little over the years, you know. Credit.
She arrives at a tailor's.
Good. Now, there's only that if you like to try the trousers, which I think no problems with at all. And now there's this, which has got a fair amount of work to be done. Perhaps you would look after it.
Yes.
I'll be with you in a moment.
A suited man approaches her.
Yes, madam, can I help you?
Good morning. I'd like to order some suits.
Certainly, ma'am. Do sit down.
You've made suits for the gentleman before, but now he lives abroad.
I see.
I took his measurements. I don't know if they're quite right.
Let me see. Oh, yes. Yes, these are more than adequate. Could we know the gentleman's name?
Burgess.
I seem to remember that we had two Mr. Burgesses.
Checking through some files.
Yes, I'm sure we can.
This, I take it, is Mr. Burgess G. How is Mr. Burgess? Fatter, I see. He was one of our more colourful customers. Too little colour in our drab lives these days. Mr. Guy favoured this pattern. It's a durable fabric. His suits were meant to take a good deal of punishment. They have stood him in good stead, I hope.
Yes, they have indeed.
I'm glad to hear it. Always getting into such scrapes, Mr. Guy. And your name is?
Brown.
There's no need for discretion here, madam.
No, truly.
My apologies. And this is the address. We put a little of ourselves into our suits. That is our loyalty.
And mum's the word.
Mum is always the word here, madam.
Moscow or Maidenhead, mum is always the word.
At a shoemaker's.
Brooks, Burgess, 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 Burgess. No.
Burgess, I'll call back later.
Burgess, Burgess. 5807. Well, if you care to follow me into the bowels of the earth, we'll see what we can find.
A basement.
5807. This is the Mr. Burgess who got into hot water. George!
Yes.
5807. 5807.
Hundreds of shelves of shoe lasts.
Seven.
It's a graveyard.
On the contrary, madam, these are all very much alive and indeed kicking. 5807. From time to time, we do have a little bonfire. George, 5807.
Excuse me, sir.
The old man ambles past him.
Oh, he's a very long way from home.
I thought he was done with.
George is quite ruthless.
Blowing dust from the wooden lasts.
Here we are. GB. Great Britain.
A cake trolley in a restaurant.
I wish you'd told me so at the time. I'd have liked to have seen the old thing again.
Well, he wanted me to take you out to lunch.
Oh.
Sent me a check.
Oh.
I'm not sure that I shall cash it.
Oh, too dry. Have any trouble getting into the stuff?
No. Nobody better than I did. Why should they? It's all been sent off. Only now he's written asking for some pyjamas.
She shows Charles the letter.
Well, I really need... Honestly, the only thing more is pyjamas. Russian ones can't be slept in. I'm not, in fact, made for that purpose. What I would like is 4 pair. Oh! White or off-white and navy blue silk, quite plain and only those 2 colours. And at last my outfit will be complete and I shall look like a real agent again.
What? Then I shall look like a real gent again.
Oh.
Well, I think the pyjamas are going to have to be it. Otherwise little Dolly Drop Drawers will be shop, shop, shop until the cows come home.
Or till the revolution comes.
At a gentleman's outfitter's, Coral is looking at the ties.
I'm afraid this gentleman no longer has an account with us, madam. His account was closed.
I know, but he wishes to open it again.
I'm afraid that is impossible.
Why?
Well, we supply pyjamas to the royal family.
So?
The gentleman is a traitor, madam.
So? Must traitors sleep in the buff?
I'm sorry. We have to draw the line somewhere.
Well, why at this? Suppose someone commits adultery in your precious pyjamas, and I imagine it has occurred. What happens when he orders his next pair of Jim Jams? Is it sorry? No can do.
I'm very sorry.
You keep on saying you're sorry. Oh, Jesus Christ. You were quite happy to satisfy this man when he was one of the most notorious buggers in London. And a drunkard into the bargain. Oh, yes, but then he was somebody in the Foreign Office. A little red piping on the sleeve, Mr. Burgess, of course. A discreet monogram on the pocket, Mr. Burgess. Oh, yes, certainly. And if there's anything else you require, Mr. Burgess, we'd be only too happy to ease down your pinstripe trousers and perform. But not anymore.
Look, madam, I don't know why you're doing this for him, but as far as we're concerned, Mr. Burgess is a client we are well rid of. Ours is a highly respectable firm.
Highly respectable? It's pricks like you that make me understand why he went. Thank Christ I'm not English.
As a matter of fact, madam, our firm isn't English in origin either.
Oh? What is it?
Hungarian.
I see. Well, you can't object if I buy an old Etonian tie. For cash, naturally. It's for the Archbishop of Canterbury's mother.
Now, Burgess is fixing his Eton tie and wearing his new suit. He checks his reflection in the mirror as he hums.
He is an Englishman, but he is an
checks his cuffs, then puts on a smart black Trilby hat. With his head held high and swinging an umbrella, he trots down the steps outside his apartment. His smart new made-to-measure shoes crunch in the snow. He smiles as he walks briskly through the streets. Moments later, a snowstorm is in full force, and he crosses a bridge with his thick camel coat over his shoulders and his black umbrella held above his head. He's still being followed, and as he strides along, many of the people he passes stop to stare at him. A sailor looks him up and down as he hurries past.